The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, February 1st. The time is 9:01, and we're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. In attendance are Senator Stevens, the Vice Chair, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland, Chair. I don't believe Senator Machicki is going to make it today. Thank you to Chris, our recording secretary, and Marissa, our moderator today. There's one item on today's calendar. Today we will hear from spokespersons of three important education agencies representing school administrators, teachers, and school boards, all of which work together to provide quality education for our children. It's my intent to give each of our presenters 30 minutes to introduce their organization and share with us the issues they see facing the K-12 education system. As a matter of process, I ask presenters to pause for questions before moving to the next slide. First up, we'll hear from Dr. Lisa Parody, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Dr. Parody, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation. Dr. Parody, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to testify today. For the record, my name is Lisa Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Slide 2, please. The Alaska Council of School Administrators is a nonprofit organization established in 1973. We'll be celebrating our 50-year anniversary here shortly. ACSA was created to serve as an umbrella for several of Alaska's premier educational leadership organizations, including the Alaska Superintendents Association, with our current president, Kerry Boyd, who is the superintendent of the Yukon-Koyukuk School District, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, with Robin Jones as the current president. She is principal of Chief Ivan Blanca School in Southwest Region School District, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, with Jennifer Rinaldi as president. She is principal at Willow Elementary School in Berriozova in the Matsu Borough School District, and ALASBO, the Alaska Association of School Business Officials. The current president is Jimmy Love. He is a school business official in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And we represent all administrators working hard to meet the needs of our students every day across Alaska. Slide 3, please.
And with no questions,
I'd like to slide. Oh, sorry.
That's right. You're good to go.
Okay, thank you. I do like this slide a lot because Alaska's size and diversity is reflected in our schools. Alaska has 54 independent school districts with enrollments ranging from 20 students to over 46,000 students. These districts are all very different, but they're united in the commitment to quality public education for all students. Our advocacy seeks to amplify and unify the diverse voices and needs of each community to ensure a high-quality education for every Alaskan student. There's no room for division between large and small, urban and rural. We are all responsible for all of our students. That unity has never been so highlighted as during the incredible collaboration that has occurred during the pandemic. Next slide, please.
Please proceed.
Within our 54 districts, Alaska schools teach over 132,000 students. I want to reiterate the sentiment that was shared by Commissioner Johnson on Friday to this committee. These students are not just a number. Each of these students is a unique Alaskan child. They are precocious third graders fascinated by science, high school sophomores struggling with math but loving welding, and kindergartners starting to learn to read. When we talk about improving student performance, remember that there are real children behind those numbers. Of our 132,000 students, we want to note that more than one-fifth of families have chosen a public correspondence option in this pandemic year. This number is unprecedented, nearly double the roughly 11% enrolled in correspondence programs in 2019. Of course, correspondence is is an enrollment, not delivery in this context. This has been a considerable challenge for our district, as these programs have seen a massive growth of families new to statewide correspondence, and those families need additional support to succeed. But districts who had to pivot on a dime to meet the needs of our students and families have done that, and done so quite admirably. In most communities in our state, from large cities to rural villages, schools are the center of the community and also the largest employer. Schools are an integral part of Alaska's communities, culturally and economically. These school facilities are also aging. Almost half of the school buildings in our state are over 40 years old, and many are in need of substantial maintenance or renovation. A top priority of Alaska districts is recruiting and retaining quality educators, teachers, principals, school business officials, and everyone in between. Retaining effective educators and leaders is essential to increasing student achievement and eliminating academic disparity for all of Alaska students. Of the over 7,000 teachers in the state, roughly 20% leave their positions every year. Reducing teacher turnover is one of the education's highest and most pressing needs. And we're pleased that Governor Dunleavy and Commissioner Johnson have been focused on this through the Task Force on Teacher Recruitment and Retention. We look forward to the results from the committee, and we are committed to working with the administration and you, the legislature, to take action on some of these recommendations to curb this huge barrier for Alaska. Slide five, please.
A few questions, please. First, Senator Hughes.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Parody, for being with us today. I want to focus on the correspondence students, and I have questioned whether the 11% during a normal year, 22% during an unusual pandemic year, is that higher than what we're seeing in other states? That's question one. And question two is, are those numbers reflective of public correspondence students, in other words, correspondence programs through public school districts, or does that also include private homeschool students using correspondence?
Dr. Parody?
Through the chair and Senator Hughes, those are excellent questions. And I'll start with the second one first, which is that the number reflects public correspondence schools. So it does not reflect students in private homeschool situations. And in fact, the Department of Education nor us at this point have an exact count on that homeschool population, because we collect data on enrollment, and so that's why we understand what the statewide correspondence numbers look like, but we don't, it's not, because they're not enrolled in public education, they aren't included in those enrollment data figures that the department has. So we don't have the homeschool number, so it does not reflect that. So that's the question two. With regard to your first question, Senator Hughes, I will have to go and look at that in terms of how we rank compared to other states, and I will follow up with you directly by providing it to committee staff to share. So I'll try and do that immediately and get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Another question from Senator Begich.
Thank you. Three questions, Dr. Parody. First, the correspondence change that's reflected here, 21.7% this year. Have you guys estimated what you expect it will be next year, given assuming that we have moved through the heart of this pandemic, we have vaccinations in place, and turned to something of an old normal, though it would be, of course, a new normal? What do you anticipate? Have that those estimates been done? I assume they have been done by school districts.
Dr. Parody?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, thank you for the great questions. With regard to next year, it obviously looks a little bit different by district, and districts have been estimating what that will look like. And to some degree, this is a moving target. Students who may have signed up for correspondence or who are being homeschooled may find that you know, is too difficult with working parents or something of the like, and are moving back into the district. We are I think really just at this point working with estimates. And so it there isn't a statewide response on that other than saying that I think as we move into next year, we'll be able to have a better understanding of where those numbers fall. You know, our student count is based on a very limited window. And if, you know, and that's where we take our estimates for the following year. And while there is a hold harmless in statute to support, you know, gradual changes of population, we really don't have a mechanism by which to support districts with the magnitude of these changes. The hold harmless wasn't designed to address the changes that would be seen in a pandemic. So I guess just in short, we're still in the process of trying to understand what that looks like statewide. We do know that students are moving back and forth, and so I think we'll really have to judge it when we, you know, get into the fall. And I'm sorry that's not a more complete answer, but I think we all understand that parents are trying to just find, parents and guardians are just trying to find the best fit for their students, and that looks different and has been an evolving situation through the pandemic. With regard to vaccinations, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman and Senator Begich, I would like to say that vaccinations have been really sporadic for teachers. Often our tribal leadership has, in some of our remote locations or village locations, has worked so closely with our school district, and we've been able to vaccinate, you know, educators across the board. But that is not the case uniformly across the state. So it really looks community by community in terms of when educators have been vaccinated. ACSA has written letters to the governor and to the commissioner and Dr. Zink, you know, asking to please prioritize educators for the immunization so that we can more safely, you know, ensure their return to the classroom. But to date, that has not been done. And I do understand that conversation has been ongoing. So hopefully we'll see even more educators vaccinated as we move forward.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the chair. Dr. Parody, when you the reason I'm asking about the number and correspondence, and perhaps this is a question LASPO should study, because we're going to be asked this year about how we fund education, and we're going to be told that we need to hold education harmless, which I generally support, but there needs to be data behind it. This is something that only the school districts can truly produce for us. So I'm hopeful that we'll actually get that number so we can predict what we need to see happen here. We can't, you know, waiting till the fall isn't good enough. We have to know now what we're going to be doing for the coming year. Otherwise, you're going to have people debating different factual or non-factual, I guess, numbers for what it will require. And we really have, this is a budget year. We have to know this number. And so I would encourage you to get a LASBO and your associations to focus on that number so that we can have that number and we can use concrete numbers to work from. But I also wanted to know, what is the deferred maintenance need of those school facilities? We have a general obligation bond that the governor has proposed. We're looking at, as you point out, schools that are 40 years old, 44%. Do you have a deferred maintenance number that we should be looking at in terms of the general obligation bond that we might suggest or provide to our finance committee, so we know what we're looking at in terms of actual cost as opposed to sort of just the amorphous number? We need costs here. We need to know the numbers.
Dr. Parody?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Begich, thank you for the questions. And two pieces. I do know that DEED has projections for next year and the with regard to hold harmless. And those numbers were presented most recently, I think last week, to the State Board of Education. And that, I think, triggers us then working district by district to understand those estimates and then be able to provide that to you. So this is, it's a current issue that we're just now being able to dig into following the window and the final calculations that the Department of Ed done. So there are projections for next year that the department has done. We will now be working, like you said, with our our partners at LASBO and our school districts to understand that and be able to provide that to you. So thank you. We've just been a little limited to have the finality of what was reported and then what DEED has in order to provide those specifics, but we will be doing that hopefully shortly. Then in regard to your second question and the general obligation bond, you asked an excellent question about, you know, should we be looking at that for our unmet needs? And our estimate is $206 million and growing in terms of the current backlog. So I think you'll see in a future slide that we have 59 buildings that are over 60 years old, and our average age of the buildings is 39 years old. So we can provide those specifics to you and the committee, and as well the department has a website dedicated, the Department of Education has a website dedicated to what those projects are. And so I think we definitely can provide you more specifics with regard to maintenance. Those numbers are on the Department of Education's website, but I will collect them and provide them to you. But our estimate, current backlog, is $206 million at this point.
Thank you, Doctor. One more question from Senator Hughes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I'm going to go back to the correspondence because a little more discussion there with Senator Begich brought another question to mind. So I'm roughly 22% correspondence. So that would then leave, 78% in brick and mortar. However, that 78% this last year, much of that group was actually doing online, right? So they weren't actually going in and out of the classroom. Pretty high percentage of that 78%. So are superintendents letting you, thinking perhaps some of that 78% might actually move over to the public correspondence programs such as IDEA, Matsu Central, et cetera, when we get back to a normal, everybody go to brick and mortar school on a regular basis. I'm thinking, because I actually had families, parents mention to me that they were exploring that idea. So I'm wondering whether your normal, your 11% enrollment in correspondence, which is, in a normal year will actually be quite a bit higher because of that. So if you're getting that sense, I'm curious. And one of the reasons I'm curious is because I think I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to misquote the governor in his state of the state, but I think he said something about an increased funding for public homeschool, which would be public correspondence, because those students, the public school districts get less per student for those correspondence students, and they would like a little bump up is my understanding, not to the same amount per student through the entire formula, but that there'd be some kind of adjustment so that they would get a little bit more per student. Is that accurate? And just so we know, because we're the appropriators, so if we are going to consider whether we would bump that up or not, I'd like to know what the superintendents are thinking, even though you can't pin down an exact number, you don't know where it's going to fall, as you answered Senator Begich. My question is, part of that group of 78% brick and mortar, do we expect some of those to shift to public correspondence programs?
Dr. Parody.
Senator Hughes, thank you for the question. Again, I think that the 78-ish percent with regard to bricks and mortar that's represented in the current numbers is probably a reflection of, you know, the pandemic, in that our districts from the beginning with their Smart Start programs that they worked with the Department of Education on, you know, went between virtual, hybrid, and in-person kind of all year long, depending on the risk level of their various communities. So it wasn't a solid virtual necessarily, or a solid in-person, but a mix of those three opportunities throughout the last 10 months, depending on what the risk level was. And that was, of course, driven by Dr. Zink and her team working with communities on those risk levels. And again, as you know, they look different across the state. So I really think that the increase in statewide correspondence is as a result of, you know, trying to find stability in a pandemic. And I'm not sure, and I'm not hearing that there will be an increased number in statewide correspondence or public correspondence in the next year. Although I do think we all acknowledge and are hopeful, you know, we're in a new normal. And we anticipate that school districts and parents and guardians now having been forced to experience different models of education will continue to explore those. And so I think it's a great opportunity for our systems to, you know, work together moving forward. But I also want to say, you know, one of the things that we know is that, you know, multiple studies show the benefits of a positive student-teacher relationship. And students who feel, you know, when they're close to a teacher in person, you know, they can feel motivated and encouraged to perform better in school, which can then lead to success beyond the classroom. So I think that motivation starts with a strong connection between the kids and their teachers, and when they are connected in that real deep way in classrooms, they learn more. And, you know, there's a researcher, Jessica Leahy, that describes that bond between a student and teacher in the classroom as the secret sauce of education. And I'm going to talk about a survey we did with our members, but many of them responded that, you know, that is so important to get our students back into the classrooms with their teachers. So I'm not convinced, and I don't know that our districts at this point are, that those numbers will increase. But I do know that we're all planning for shifting model as we go forward.
Thank you, Dr. Paradis.
In terms of the second question, Mr. Chairman, I know that the governor did introduce a bill. I believe it's SB 58. And I do believe that it increases the ADM for correspondence to in-person. So I think it is I think that number is the same, but I'm just analyzing that bill. It was just introduced, and I will follow up with you directly on those numbers.
Thank you, Dr. Paradis. We intend to hear SB 58 and have more in-depth conversation later on that. I believe another question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, Dr. Paradis, this hit a chord with all of us, the correspondents. I know those figures are not going to be the same in the future. They will change. And, of course, I've heard from a lot of parents who talk about how unprepared they are to be teachers, affecting their jobs and their careers as well, and how I think many parents now realize how important teachers are and how crucial it is that our kids get back into buildings, into schools. So I guess you've answered some of the questions I had, but a couple of issues I think are important that your agency will certainly have to pay attention to. The vaccinations you talk about, you're talking about vaccinations for the professionals, for teachers, and for administrators, I assume. There's a lot of concern among teachers' organizations about students being vaccinated as well. Maybe you could address that a little bit. And the second question I'll ask has to do with summer school. You know, many districts are looking towards summer school. That's going to be expensive. We have to hire a lot of teachers to do that. If we have a hold harmless budget, how are we going to pay for that? Is that being funded entirely through federal government funds? Maybe you could reflect on those two issues, the vaccination of students and the summer school impact, and how we fund it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, and Senator Stevens, thank you for the questions. And with regard to student vaccinations, my understanding from our statewide medical officer, Dr. Zink, and her team is that there have not been clinical trials for students yet or for children yet. And so we are lagging in terms of the ability to have a vaccine for students at this time. I understand and I can get this information and provide it, but I believe that they will be starting those clinical trials, but they have not been done to date. So we are not anticipating having vaccines available for students for quite some time. So So that is question one. And with regard to summer school, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stevens, I know that there was a legislator, the House Chairman of Education, asked that we survey our members and ask them about learning loss and summer school. And the response was that while summer school is really important, that it looks different, again, across the state in terms of what is needed for learning loss. And so there wasn't a clear signal that summer school would be the most beneficial for students across the state. So some districts will choose to do that, but others will do other types of intensive support to students. And so I would agree with you, Senator Stevens, that these are costly interventions, and we're fortunate that we do have some additional federal funds to support this short-term intensive need, but agree that long-term, those are additional expenses that are not anticipated in our existing allocations. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Parody. I believe we're going to move on to the next slide, which looks like it starts with joint position statements. And we're approaching the end of your 30 minutes. I'm going to go beyond that time for a little bit, give you a little more time, but I'd ask you to try to shorten your answers a little bit. Over.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So joint position statements, our number one priority is student achievement, and adequate funding is our most critical need. You each should have received a personal copy of our joint position statements. You know, with the huge diversity in our schools and districts, one of our focuses as an organization is supporting collaboration between education leaders to articulate unified priorities across Alaska. So the joint position statements are developed every year collaboratively over several months by committee of our members, and then they are reviewed and revised by the members, and then they are voted on by all the members. So they do represent a consensus, and I want to quickly work through those. If you can go to slide six, please. In anticipation of this hearing, we did another survey to our members, and Chair Holland had asked us to share some of our ideas on improving student achievement, which is always at the core of our thinking as educators. But again, there isn't necessarily one approach that's best for improving achievement anywhere. These needs are vast as the state itself. But you can see on the screen some of the barriers that districts have identified and some of our priorities. And the results pictured in these charts align directly with the priorities as outlined in our joint position statements. But this was a recent survey done, and I think it speaks for itself. One note is that unique amongst these barriers is remote learning, as we've been discussing. And I was going to talk about some of the responses, but I will provide those to the committee in the interest of time from the members. Next slide, please. Seven. So before diving into our priorities for school, I wanted to highlight the importance of so many factors outside of schools. You see on the slide the quote, students have to Maslow before they can bloom. Bloom's taxonomy classifies learning objectives, and educators use it as a tool to understand and improve student achievement. But as you think about student learning, you have to think about supporting the students. Kids can't learn when they haven't eaten or slept, for example. You are no doubt familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which reflects the most basic physical requirements that any person must meet before they are able to focus on anything else. These two have to be considered in tandem, alongside each other, to best support each student. So, for example, in many districts, our educational leaders find that providing breakfast and lunch options greatly increase the student participation and the engagement. And throughout the pandemic, providing meals to students in need was a high priority for districts statewide. And in some cases, we learned it was the primary source of the meals. Next slide, please. At the base of the Maslow hierarchy is a basic physical and mental safety need, which are tragically not met for many of our students. Alaska has the nation's highest rates of suicide, sexual assault, and repeat child maltreatment, a category that includes most severe instances of neglect and abuse. Our extremely high rates of childhood trauma do impact our education outcomes. Research has shown that adverse childhood experiences have direct and lifelong impacts, from worse health to lower incomes and increased rates of incarceration. Addressing this trauma is a top priority of schools. This year in particular, schools have added the challenge of addressing mental health aspects of isolation and stress due to the ongoing pandemic. Next slide, please. I do want to, as we look at early childhood, take a second just to thank Senator Begich and Governor Dunleavy for bringing SB 8 and for Senator Hughes and to Senator Hughes for bringing SB 42 in recognition of the importance of early childhood education. The 2019 Alaska Developmental Profile found that almost 70% of our students entering kindergarten did not have the preparation they needed to succeed in school. Students without adequate early foundations, including literacy, as the governor has highlighted, struggle throughout their academic careers. Research clearly demonstrates that early instruction is key to healthy brain development, and it is investment in lifelong dividends. A recent economic review found that the return on investment for early childhood can be as high as 5-to-1. These programs improve efficiency and student achievement, and simultaneously, students with quality early foundations require less intensive interventions later on, graduate, and find quality jobs at high rates. We really believe that early childhood education is a sound investment in Alaska schools in the future. Slide 10, please. Career and technical education programs are another important investment in Alaska's future. CTE for both rural and urban students is critical to high academic standards and Alaska's economic growth and stability. These programs give students the opportunity to develop future-ready skills, preparing them for quality, high-paying jobs. Programs aligned with local and state job markets need allow students to graduate directly into career. Robust CTE programs promote improved student achievement and increase graduation rates. Slide 11, please. School safety. If you recall the Maslow's hierarchy of needs I shared earlier, the need for safety, including a safe environment, is at the foundation of the pyramid. Students can't learn in an environment that isn't safe. ACSA supports improving the safety and well-being of our students, knowing this is critical to increasing student achievement. And quite candidly, for parents and guardians, this is the only thing that outranks student achievement, the safety of their children. And we've already talked about the age and condition of many of our buildings. So we'll move to slide 12, please, increasing bandwidth. And I do want to thank Senator Hoffman for his work supporting the broadband assistance grant and for all of your support in that bill that was passed last session, increasing the floor of bandwidth across rural Alaska to 25 megs. The pandemic has caused a paradigm shift in education, and broadband is going to be at the base of what we need for students going forward. Nationwide, the COVID pandemic has brought light to what educators call the homework gap. A large portion of our students don't have the technology or connectivity at home to be able to access the resources they need to stay engaged with school. And the problem is exacerbated here in Alaska, where we have by far the highest share of schools and students without adequate internet access in the country. So we see this as a matter of equity. Our limited infrastructure in rural schools, as well as high costs statewide, remain a concern, and we look forward to continuing to partner with you to continue to incrementally increase our bandwidth. Slide 13, please. And this, I think you've seen, is, if not the highest, certainly one of the highest results of the superintendent survey that I mentioned earlier. Improving teacher retention is one of our top priorities for ensuring Alaska students receive quality education. The research really shows that teacher quality is the most important school-based factor in student achievement, and the teacher quality and tenure are directly correlated. Teaching is a skill that you learn through years of practice, and keeping teachers in the classroom and in Alaska is key to improving our student outcomes. We have chronically high rates of teacher turnover, principal turnover, you can see on the screen, with rural and remote schools really being hit the hardest. Understanding the reasons why teachers leave their classrooms is necessary to address this problem. I do want to thank Governor Dunleavy and Commissioner Johnson for creating the Task Force on Teacher Retention and Recruitment that continues to study this issue. I've served on that committee as an advisor to the task force, and we know that support for teachers, including competitive compensation, retirement, supportive schools, and community connections are key to retention. Yes. Slide 14, please. I'm coming to a close, Mr. Chairman. One thing I'll note is that the problem of educator retention certainly isn't limited to teachers. Alaska also struggles with high rates of principal and superintendent turnover, school business officials, and all of those professionals serving in school business official or school offices, counselors, and other professionals. These issues are all connected. Superintendent turnover drives principal turnover through instability and uncertainty, which then feeds into teachers leaving because they don't feel supported in their classrooms and connected to their schools. Addressing turnover at all levels is essential to supporting our schools. We are trying to help problem solve. We do this by connecting and supporting our members. We have aspiring superintendent cohorts, district office employee cohorts. I know that our business LASBO members have new business manager support, and we are focused on early career stages to provide training and support across school administrators. New and incoming superintendents do a first and second year cohort and meet regularly for professional development and work with assigned mentors. This year, again, we are turning over 12-plus superintendents. And since I've been in this job, we've experienced almost 100% turnover. The Alaska School Leadership Academy is a partnership with the Department of Education and Early Development. It connects early career principals with a cohort of peers to engage in collective skill building and mutual support with mentorship. And now in its 38th year, the Alaska Staff Development Network, which is a division of ACSA, and is one of the largest providers of advanced training and high-quality professional development, offer support on an ongoing basis for teachers and educators in Alaska. Next slide, please.
Dr. Parody, I'm going to go ahead and end your presentation this time. I wanted to let you get as far as educator retention. I've gone a little over the time. I do have a question from Senator Begich.
Just very quickly, Dr. Parody, I know that you care about educator retention a lot, and that issue matters a lot. Have you guys done any data on has there been any increase in that, the issue of retention or loss of folks as a result of the pandemic? Have you seen any exacerbated increase? And if not, or if you don't have that data, could you provide it to us at some point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, that's an excellent question, and I would tell you that I think we've seen an increase in the turnover at the superintendent level, as I shared, and I anticipate that we'll see additional turnover increases across the state, which will be realized as we're going to sign contracts. So I'm happy to provide updates to you as we experience that, but given the difficulty and challenges of the last year, I worry that we'll see a huge increase. At this point, we don't have that information, but we're entering contract signing stages, so we will know shortly. And I think one thing that we've done that the commissioner talked about, our organization has hosted regular meetings with superintendents, with statewide principals, the commissioner, and with medical officials, really trying to support everyone to understand what's happening and to be on the same page and in collaboration. And I'm hopeful that really working more closely together this year, we'll be able to retain some of the teachers that we so preciously need. But I think those numbers remain to be seen, and we'll be happy to provide those to you. And with that, I will close and thank you all for your time and attention, and just remind you that I'm always here to answer any questions and be a resource for you. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your time, Dr. Parody. Next up will be Norm Wooten, Director of Advocacy at the Association of Alaska School Boards. Mr. Wooten, I apologize for getting off to a late start on you. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation. We have your first slide up. I'm sorry, Mr. Wooten, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Norm Wooten. I'm the Director of Advocacy for the Association of Alaska School Boards. And, Mr. Chairman, I think that I can get you back on your time schedule. I will be brief where possible. AASB is a 501c3 3C organization that was established in 1954 to represent school districts across the state of Alaska. We're governed by a 15-member board of directors. Our current president is Katie Oliver, who serves on the school board for the Kodiak Island Borough School District. And our executive director is Mr. Lon Garrison, who I think is listening on as well. Slide two, please.
Slide two is up.
Thank you. And the our mission statement is what we call our roadmap to guide our things. And just a couple of things that I want to highlight about this. First of all, our job is to advocate, and we do that by assisting school boards, and we're for a quality public education, and we have a focus on student achievement. And then it's through effective local governance. We have a long-held belief that that effective local governance is about local government connecting with local communities to best meet the needs of students in each individual community. And again, we believe that the model of local governance best meets that needs of students wherever they may be, whether they're in rural or urban Alaska, in large or small school districts. Next slide, please, number three. So the question is, how does AASB assist school boards? And I have a menu there of various divisions and programs that we have within the Association of Alaska School Boards, and I won't bore you by reading that that entire list to you, but we have quite an extensive menu for districts, resources for districts to access for us to help them in their role of local governance. Slide four, please. AASB has a set of legislative priorities, as does the Superintendent's Association that Dr. Parity went over. Our process is that resolutions in the early fall are submitted to AASB, and every member district is encouraged to provide resolutions. Those resolutions at our delegate assembly in November at the annual conference are debated and amended and adopted by the delegate assembly, by a vote of the delegate assembly. Those adopted resolutions just a day later then are debated and prioritized by what we call like-size district forums, forums made up of districts who have similar ADM numbers, and they issue priorities. And then following the annual conference, our board of directors meets, and they take all of that data from the delegate assembly, from the like-size district forums, and then they prioritize them and adopt them as a board of directors. And that gives we as a staff then a roadmap to move forward in advocating. And I'll just quickly go through our legislative priorities. Next slide, please, number five. Our first legislative priority is public education funding, and that can be summed up by the phrase adequate, reliable, and predictable. And we believe that the ability to know exactly what we're doing leads to efficiency and effectiveness within local school districts as they put together the budget. And I guess that's all I'll say on that. I'll leave you to read that at your leisures. So please go to slide number six, please. Student wellness and safe schools. And this legislative priority has taken on a new emphasis with the pandemic. Students and adults across the nation are suffering some pretty significant effects of the pandemic and the social distancing and hunkering down and all of these types of things. And with students, you know, not having that social interaction, not having that one-on-one with teachers, not being able to gather in classrooms has had an effect on them. And it's something that we are paying particular attention to and working with school boards to effectively meet that challenge. And I will tell you, the last bullet point on that slide is something that we are spending a considerable amount of time on in our district. We have created a set of policies to deal with sexual abuse, and obviously it's very minimal, the number of school staff that cross that border, but we have created policies on professional boundaries And we are, along with many partners across the state of Alaska, are working with school districts to implement those policies and to implement training to be given to their staff and their communities as they move forward. We think that one incident of sexual abuse is one too many, and so we're working with districts on that a great deal and spending a considerable amount of time on that. And I just wanted to highlight that, is that we want to be part of the solution to that problem. So slide number 7, please. And let me start off by apologizing that I mislabeled the title on this. I guess it's a lesson in never proofread your own material. That should be internet connectivity and distance delivery on that slide number 7 as the heading. That first bullet point, of course, is a federal issue to fully fund E-rate. We are so appreciative that legislature is cognizant of the issue of broadband connectivity or the lack of broadband connectivity across our state. We see that as an equity issue, and that particularly during the pandemic, this has created a new urgency on ensuring that broadband connectivity is available to all school districts. Once again, that curriculum should be locally adapted and adopted by school boards. We believe that that colleges of education need to step up their game on instruction for teacher candidates to distance deliver curriculum to students. I don't think we'll ever go back to 100% in classroom instruction. It'll always be a hybrid of some sort. So go to slide number 8, please. And as Dr. Parody mentioned, also one of our priorities is teacher and administrator training, recruitment, and retention through multiple ways. Along with Dr. Parody, I serve on the Governor's Task Force on Teacher Recruitment and Retention as a consultant. And the high rate of teachers leaving the profession or moving out of state is unacceptable, and we need to stymie that and do that. We believe that the teacher mentoring program, a robust teacher mentoring program, is one of the solutions for that, to support those new teachers, professional development, and work with the university to step up their game in providing locally educated teachers for Alaska's schools. However, we recognize that the University of Alaska, it's asking too much of the University of Alaska system to provide all of our needs. And so we're also working with Alaska Teacher Placement to ensure that that we are most effective in encouraging outside teachers to apply for jobs within the state of Alaska. And so if you could go to slide number 9, please.
One moment. Mr. Wooten, we have a question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's actually more of a comment. Just last year we had a great presentation. I shouldn't say great, because it was a very disappointing presentation from the University of Alaska. Part of the reason why they made that presentation was we lost the accreditation for our education school in Anchorage. And as a consequence of the, I think, failed opportunities by the university, we saw a substantial decrease in the number of teachers produced by the university. And I'm only bringing this up since Norm has brought this up in relationship to teacher training and recruitment. You will have noticed he moved a little bit away from reliance on the university, and I just hope at some point, Mr. Chairman, in the future, we can do a deep dive again with the university under its new leadership and examine what they're doing to actually recruit homegrown teachers here and what their plan is going into the future. We didn't see one last year that was significant at all. And so what the director has brought up, what Norm Wooten has brought up, is something that I think we all need to be aware of, which is our partner, the University of Alaska, needs to be held accountable to helping provide our teachers for this. And I'd like to know what progress they've made since the very sort of devastating hearing we had last year. So bring it to your attention simply because I think it's an issue that you would find valuable, and I think that certainly our elected school board members would find valuable to know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Baggett. Mr. Wooten, you can continue.
Thank you very much, and through the chair, Senator Baggett, thank you for those comments. I appreciate your, and I agree with your comments on that. Okay, slide number nine. Literacy is a fundamental human right. We believe that funding and support and a focus on early childhood literacy skills development is critical for an educated citizenry that will move forward. We strongly believe that literacy proficiency by the third grade is essential for the success of students, not only throughout their K-12 education, but into their adult life as well. Reading is just a fundamental skill that needs to be emphasized as they move forward. We understand that graduation rates are not where we want them to be, and our school boards are working mightily on that to try to create a more literate populace. Educational equity is attained through literacy proficiency, we believe, and that we understand and we believe that literacy is a fundamental human right, and we will be moving our support behind several bills that have been introduced both by Senator Hughes and Senator Begich to move that element of education forward. We strongly believe in that, and we have multiple resolutions that will support us as we support those bills. And then finally, number 10, Mr. King, the Senate Education Aide, asked the three of us that were presenting today to come up with ideas that we think would create efficiency and effectiveness in the field of education. And so I tried to come up with some concrete ideas that are attainable, and so I would just like this. First of all, obviously, adequate, equitable, and predictable funding. We believe that falls near the top of the list. Secondly, second bullet point, we would encourage you to look at every piece of legislation that comes up and see if it's important enough to incorporate into legislation. Unfunded mandates are a thorn in the side of school board members, and we're continually asked to do more with the same amount of money. And some of these things should be done. Obviously, we are not averse to credible, realistic goals, new goals to come forward. But we would just ask you to look at unfunded mandates. We also would ask for a comprehensive review of all of the Alaska statutes and administrative regulations having to do with education. If they should be unnecessary or if they're no longer applicable, we would like these to be repealed. And we would certainly partner with you, as I know our educational partners, organizations, I believe I can speak to them, would also be happy to partner with you. You know, the thing about a piece of legislation that's enacted to laws, it tends to have a life that lives far beyond the purpose of enacting it in the first place. And we would just like a comprehensive review of that. We also would like you to consider a Senate joint resolution at some point to assist districts as we advocate on the federal level to increase IDEA funding, the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act. It's the legislation that was enacted to support special education students and create that whole system. At the time that law was enacted, U.S. Congress said that their goal was to reach 40% federal funding to support IDEA, the federal special education law. it has never exceeded 15% in any year since then. And if we could get some state legislative support to help us as we advocate on a federal level, that would be very helpful, and probably the best way is through a Senate joint resolution. We would like you, the next bullet point, to consider the ongoing governor's task force on teacher recruitment and retention as that report comes out, and seriously consider enacting some of those recommendations that are likely to come out of there as legislation you might support, introduce and support, and to help us with that recruitment and those retention efforts. And finally, we think that it would be effective if DEED, the department, was funded to create curriculum in core subject areas that includes language arts, math, and science to give local school districts that do not have the capacity to conduct a in-depth, comprehensive review of their curriculum the option to introduce an off-the-shelf version of a curriculum in those core subjects that DEED might have that they could provide. Currently, districts work very well with each other to help each other, and they share their curriculum and so forth. But a few years back, there was legislation that enabled DEED to put together a curriculum. That funding was eventually withdrawn, and that curriculum was never developed. But we think this is something worth looking at again. And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my support, and I think I finished a little early to get you back on track. So I'm available for any questions, but I thank you for the opportunity. And as Dr. Parity mentioned, I'm always available to assist or answer questions at your convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten. I didn't intend to put the burden on you to get me back on track, but I appreciate it. We do have a question from Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Norm. Always good to hear from you. The governor, in his State of the State speech, talked about developing an office of reading improvement, something like that, in the Department of Education. Certainly the last thing we want is just more bureaucracy, but do you have any reflection on that? Do you think that can help? I know there are certainly some districts that do extremely well in reading, the larger districts particularly. The smaller districts, the 40 smaller ones, have trouble with that. We want to make sure that this actually works and that it has an impact. Do you have any reflection on that office?
Mr. Wooten?
Well, just as you, the first I'd heard of that was during the governor's State of the State message, and as always, Senator Stevens, I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Stevens, the devil is always in the details, and we would certainly look favorably upon anything that could be created to assist districts. And I will echo, an office for the sake of having an office is often ineffective, but if it's truly designed to assist districts in their efforts to increase reading literacy, we would be behind something like that. But we would need to see the details on that. Senator Stevens, I hope that – I'm not trying to evade the question, but I hope that answers what your query was.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A question from Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's good to hear your voice, Norm, again this year. So several times you brought up the adequate, reliable, predictable funding. And on slide 5, you one of the items on there that maybe I missed it last year, but it looked like a new one to me. And it was the final bullet that said prevent state-mandated school consolidation, especially in rural Alaska. I'm wondering if that's new. But I'm also wondering if your association, as long as we could retain local input, would be open to some adjustment, whether it's shared administrations or something, to help us run the schools more economically without any negative impacts on student achievement. Because, some of the school districts are so tiny as far as the number of students, does it make sense to have separate administrations? So I know that is one thing that has been considered, and I don't remember that being something that your organization, sounds like you took a vote or you decided you do not want consolidation, but if we're going to work with you to provide reliable funding, and I was actually open to Senator Costello's constitutional amendment by changing it a year in advance to give you that stability, but we're going to need you all to work with us and the local school boards to work with us to help us achieve greater efficiency. So I'm just wondering if we could retain local input at the school board, you know, at the community level, but still do something to reduce the cost of having so many individual school districts. And I think Senator Stevens' comment about the Office of Reading, that, you know, if you had a little bit larger district in some of these cases, you'd have the ability to have maybe some greater expertise for some of these core areas.
Mr. Wooten?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you. Let me just start out by saying we've had a resolution opposing opposing school consolidation for many years. It just rose to the surface, a little closer to the surface this year as the delegate assembly looked over that. So it's not new. It's just risen to new levels as a result of certain bills that might have been introduced over the last couple of years. And just let me say that I'm not going to go against what our membership and the delegate assembly have proposed. And so just be aware of that. And from the very beginning of statehood, local control has been a guiding mantra for the state of Alaska since statehood, and it hasn't abated any whatsoever. And so I know that there would be very great pushback from districts if they were asked to consolidate their school districts with other school districts and lose their local control. Let me say, however, that we are certainly not averse. None of our school districts are averse to sharing services in ways that they could maintain local control as a local school districts and yet save money and create efficiency through shared services. And in fact, several school districts across the state are doing that, and we stand ready to assist them in ways that they might have other opportunities to do that as well. So I agree with you in some parts of it and disagree, and our membership disagrees with you in other parts. They want to maintain their flexibility and their independence as a local school district, but they are certainly willing to look at ways that they might share services to create efficiencies.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten. And a question or comment from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the last point, the shared administrative services, we do have statutory authority for that. Both Senator Hughes and myself supported funding it, you know, which is an incentive. And I think it has been used in the past, so I'm encouraged to hear that you still agree with the shared administration, though I think you would also agree, Norm, that that should actually have the appropriate incentive that was that both Senator Hughes and I fought for almost 4 years ago now, it seems, three and a half years ago. But I wanted to echo something that Senator Hughes said as well, which was the constitutional amendment by Senator Costello. I wanted to know what your organization's position was on that. Should it be reintroduced, that would have been forward funding of the education budget. And then finally, just on Senator Stevens's comment, I'm concerned about the governor's office of reading improvement. If the governor's office of reading improvement is something that exists outside of the Department of Education, I think that it's important for us to not begin to separate our focus on reading between an administrative approach and a approach backed by our state school board. So I'm going to be looking at that very closely. Like you, it was new to me. So I want to be sure it's doing what it's intended to do, and as Senator Stevens has expressed, not just creating an unnecessary burden. No doubt the governor's focus on reading is consistent, as is yours, and we all recognize that without literacy, we simply don't move our population forward. So thank you for your presentation, but I'm curious about your comments on the constitutional amendment.
Mr. Wooten?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Begich, thank you. Forward funding is something that's near and dear to the heart of school boards, and we would certainly our resolutions would support a constitutional amendment on that to have forward funding. And in fact, we believe so much in it that we have entered an amicus brief on behalf of the legislature for separation of powers, and that revolves around forward funding, and that's our interest in that, Senator Begich. And I will just restate again, any creation of an office of reading or anything of that nature, the devil is in the details. Thank you, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten. With no more questions, do you have any final comments?
No, sir. I think I've spoken enough this morning, and you've heard enough from me. So thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you again, Mr. Wooten. Finally, we will hear from Tom Claymeyer, President of the National Education Association of Alaska. Mr. Claymeyer, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Chair Holland, committee members. For the record, I'm Tom Claymeyer, the NEA Alaska President. Thank you for inviting me to speak today. It's a real privilege for me to be representing my colleagues, almost 12,000 educators who are busy supporting student learning in schools or via internet connections all over the state as we speak. It's good to see some familiar faces and also some new ones on the Senate Education Committee this session. Welcome, Chair Holland and President Michicki. We look forward to working with you to improve outcomes for Alaska students. And it's also great to have the continuity of seeing Senator Hughes, Stevens, and Begich back here bringing their experience and policy knowledge to this effort. We've made some real strides and progress together with Commissioner Johnson and the governor and other education stakeholders when we keep our focus on students, such as seen in the successes of the Alaska Education Challenge and the work done last session on the Alaska Reads Act. For the members of the committee who I have not had the pleasure yet to meet, I offer a short introduction of myself. I'm a United States Air Force veteran. My first assignment was to Elmendorf Air Force Base, of course now Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, in 1989. That's how I came to Alaska. I found my calling to teach shortly after I arrived. As a volunteer, I became the director of the church youth group on base. And then rather than leaving Alaska, I separated from the service so I could stay here and use my GI Bill to attend UAA, earning my degree in education. I began my career as a social studies high school teacher with ASD in 1996, and I'm proud to say that I'm in my 25th year in education in the state now, and now serving, of course, as NEA Alaska president. As you are aware, this has probably been the most unique and challenging school year each and every single one of us has experienced. The words pandemic, unprecedented, COVID, and many others will likely be etched into our collective memories for as long as we live. I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the tremendous efforts of all of our educators across the state who have worked tirelessly to keep learning happening despite the enormous challenges presented by the pandemic. Alaskan educators have spent countless hours planning, innovating, and creating to deliver instruction, many by continuing work with students in person, some remote, others having to switch back and forth, and others still juggling them both at the same time. Our school employees have constantly adapted to the moment and transformed their craft to meet the needs of every child because that's what they do. Many of our members volunteered along with school administrators on school Smart Start committees to develop and enforce plans for the continuation of learning. Alaskans all across the state served as frontline workers, school nurses, and health aides, helping to keep our students, colleagues, and communities safe. They kept the lights on, sanitized, clean, and equipped our schools to be havens of safety and provide as much stability as possible during an uncertain time. We pulled together to ensure that students continued to be fed regardless of school closures, even if that meant doing home drop-offs. The buses may not have been picking up children at times, but Alaskans kept them moving in order to meet the needs of children. In short, our public school system works because it's sustained by the heart, soul, sweat, and tears that school personnel pour into it. If anything, the pandemic demonstrated how resilient our public schools are, how innovative they are. Our students have not fallen behind. They've survived a pandemic, and they've done so in large part because of the dedication and hard work of our educators. And, of course, we're going to continue that work. If we're not now turning the corner on COVID, then perhaps we can see around the bend a little bit. We'd like to continue the collaboration and build on the relationships from the last session on our legislative priorities and continue to grow student learning and maximize our children's potential and possibilities. Like most systems, stability and continuity are the key to success and to improvement. There are a number of factors in this committee's purview that can lead directly to improve student outcomes. First, as has been mentioned earlier, we have a real challenge with staff turnover in communities and schools. According to a recent survey by the Regional Educational Laboratory, 22% of Alaska's teachers and 25% of principals will leave their school and their roles each year. I don't know what the employee turnover rates are for other industries, but this seems fairly alarming to me. I can only imagine the implications if our hospitals or if North Slope operations were losing 1 in 4 of their employees every year. Among those huge losses each year, of course, for us, are some of our best and brightest young educators. Alaska used to have teacher job fairs that were flooded with interested applicants. Recently, we've started to hear stories of job fairs in Alaska with more administrators trying to hire than applicants applying for those jobs. Alaskan recruiters have also been turned away from job fairs in the lower 48, where they then were trying to recruit because they're experiencing similar teacher shortages. And this has had a huge financial impact on the state. To quantify the fiscal costs of Alaska's revolving door in education, let me share some quick facts. The UA system produces approximately 300 teachers a year. With our current turnover rate, Alaska is generally looking to hire about 1,000 teachers a year, which causes an unusual burden on districts to recruit from outside. You may recall a 2017 ICER analysis which calculated the cost of recruiting a teacher to Alaska to be $20,000. With a need of 1,000 teachers, we're looking at a total loss of $20 million per year in teacher recruitment and retention costs alone. And this is only for teachers. The actual number is likely much higher if we consider similar costs for administrators and all of our many education support professionals. Worse, I think there's no way to fully calculate the loss to students when an educator who lives in their community gets to know families, becomes part of that community, but then leaves after a few short years or even less to greener pastures on the road system or closer to family in the lower 48. Certainly, we likely won't be able to ever eliminate all of the turnover, but surely we can do better. I owe it to my members and to you to be very direct about what to many of them is exacerbating or accelerating this high rate of turnover. In no uncertain terms, Alaska has the worst retirement system for educators in the country. Alaska has the preeminence of being the only state that lacks both a pension and Social Security for educators. Everybody else has one or the other, whereas our Tier 3 members have neither. A Monte Carlo analysis by the state's own chief investment officer from 2019 details the following, that 75% of teachers and administrators hired after 2006 who worked for 30 years in Alaska would likely run out of their retirement savings. They're projected to run out of money in their retirement after only 20 years of retirement. And of course, with life expectancies being what they are, they have no social net after that.
Mr. Claymire, I believe we have a question from Senator Hughes on retention.
Yes, it's on the teacher turnover and the teacher shortage, Mr. Chair. So thank you, Mr. Claymire, for your passion and your concern and the impact you've had on youth all these years. I can tell it in your voice, so I appreciate that. So we have a national shortage. You're speaking to it different ways that we could improve things, and it's going to only get worse, I'm afraid, as you I think you're concerned about as well. So if Dr. Parody's listening, perhaps she could offline or later kind of respond to this too, because it all comes down to preparing our Alaskan children and youth for their futures. And if we're going to have this ongoing shortage problem, we have to pull out the stops and do everything we can do. And one of the things is, my understanding is there is a private vo-tech school that has teachers in some rural communities partnering with Native organizations and with our university community college system. So they're out in some of these locations. And so I know you represent the public teachers in this state, but would you have a problem if in some of these situations we could take advantage of these private vo-tech teachers that are in the rural areas to provide some opportunities for those students? Because as you know, if a student gets excited about a certain career field and they start applying themselves, that helps them in their overall, would help them in their overall public classrooms as well in other subject areas, because they start to put together their education having relevance for their future. So question to you, and then for Dr. Parody, if she's listening offline, would you support partnering with private vo-tech schools? I know there's at least one out there in some communities.
Mr. Claymire?
Thank you, Senator Hughes, through the chair. Certainly, the career technical education programs are fantastic. We absolutely need to match kids with their interest and their skills. As Mr. Wooten said, the devil's in the details, right? I'm not familiar with that particular specific program that you're referring to, but what we would absolutely support is programs that grow our own Alaska teachers to increase the availability of those programs for our students, that creating pipelines or pathways to get more young people into the professions that match up with our local and our state economies. But we're certainly willing to take a closer look and hear more. But I do, as you mentioned, have full confidence in our public education system to be able to meet that need. As far as what partnerships they engage in and how they do that, that would have to be looked at more deeply.
With no other questions, I apologize for the interruption. Please proceed.
Thank you. Without any kind of pension or Social Security, this generation of Alaska teachers and administrators lack the critical leg of most retirement stools. Many of the best and the brightest who dug into the details earlier in their career realized how at risk they would be and made the tough choice to leave the state. It's difficult to get complete data on the issue because the exit information, exit interviews and that is hard to come by at the district level, and then collating that at the state level is even more difficult. But I can tell you from my personal experience, just in the last couple of years, anecdotally, a good friend of mine, Jake Todd, who is born and raised, he was Alaskan son of educators, he left the service high school community and joined the military in order to get a pension. James Harris, who was the 2017 Alaska State Teacher of the Year, who was at Soldotna High School, left. He's in Washington State for the same reason. Daniel Bowen, kindergarten teacher from Mountain View Elementary on the peninsula, left for Michigan for a pension. Brenna Langford, Anchorage education, special education teacher and a local leader, went to Minnesota for the same reason. And these are just a few examples that I could list off the top of my head. There has been a recent work done by the governor's teacher recruitment and retention working group, including a survey of current educators. The survey just closed last week, and the results of which we're looking forward to seeing and what we can learn about the issue as well. I appreciate the governor and the commissioner and this committee as well for acknowledging the challenge and working to find solutions together. So thank you. A number of policy solutions have been developed, some of which include revenue neutral proposals that I might point you to that are specifically designed to prevent any unfunded liabilities while providing the security of a retirement. I would like to direct the Commission's attention to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee's consultants report from January 18th of this year, so just a couple weeks ago. It details a plan that has that is designed to offer retirement security at the same cost to the state while protecting it from future liabilities. And I'll have our government relations director, Matt Moser, forward these references and documents to the committee so that you'll have a direct access to them as well. Additionally, I would like to commend Senator Stevens, Senator Hughes, and others in the committee who have supported the additional no-cost idea in the past to increase stability and improve student outcomes, and hope that forward funding of public education is once again a part of the discussion this session. Forward funding is the cornerstone of stable district budgets and programs, and the schools our students deserve. This is a no-cost way to provide continuity for districts and some security for employees who might face being laid off each spring. Many of you are all too familiar with our state's annual pink slip problem, but each year, many school districts, in the face of uncertain funding from the state, are forced to lay off and then attempt to rehire teachers in the fall, often to no avail. There's a further wrinkle, of course, related to funding this year that's already been discussed that was caused by the pandemic, which is critical. Our school funding mechanisms were not designed to anticipate the wild fluctuations in enrollment and attendance that have been caused by the global pandemic, which we're all navigating. My colleagues from the Council of School Administrators have the exact enrollment numbers, I'm sure. But needless to say, some districts have experienced such fluctuations in enrollment, which has led to a precipitous drop in anticipated funding. The current statutory hold harmless language is inadequate in the current crisis. In fact, I'd say it's kind of a misnomer. In particular, we're already starting to hear about projected cuts this year. Based on current projections in the Fairbanks School District, they've announced that they're anticipating laying off about 250 employees this year, which is represents over 15% of their workforce. On the Kenai Peninsula, the school district is eliminating 5 assistant principal positions, or at least they've proposed to do this so far, 41 certificated positions, and 10 support staff positions, all at a time when students need that support most. Our members are leaders, members and leaders are in complete agreement with the Council of School Administrators that the only reasonable way to truly hold students and schools harmless is to allow the districts their choice of using the current count or their count from 2019 as a floor for fiscal year 2021 for budget purposes. These enrollment swings are likely temporary, and as schools return to more and more face-to-face instruction, enrollment numbers will once again rise prior to next year's counts. Hopefully this spring, we'll see those numbers increasing again. And we need to maintain our existing educational infrastructure to support these returning students. The COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in unanticipated costs, and safely reopening school buildings will require resources. We urge this committee and the Alaska Legislature to not see federal dollars for education related to COVID relief as an opportunity to further cut state-provided school funds. I hope this committee will consider inviting the Legislative Finance Division to detail the historical trends related to education funding for the last decade. When adjusted for inflation, the funding has generally declined or been flat at best, although there have been some attempts here and there over the years to rectify that. It hasn't resulted in a permanent solution. Our students deserve our full commitment to their education. Challenges remain, of course, as we move forward in a post-COVID world once we get there, but there are opportunities as well. Of course, one thing COVID has done is reaffirmed the value of in-person instruction, but it must remain as an absolute priority to only do so safely. Steadfastly adhering to the current CDC guidelines and direction of public health officials. Educators must be vaccinated as soon as possible so that they can safely interact with students face-to-face without the fear of passing along the virus to them and their families, and also to ensure that we have enough healthy employees to keep school buildings open and operating. We must enforce social standards and mask standards and provide adequate PPE and ventilation for schools. And we must also improve mental health services for students. Even before the pandemic, our students needed more access to counselors, nurses, social workers, and mental health services. This is one of the best investments we can make to continue to maximize learning and support our students' growth into productive adults. Working together, we can build on previous collaborative bipartisan efforts focused on student success, such as the Pre-K Alaska Reads Act, with our other education stakeholders, such as our colleagues at the Alaska Council of School Administrators and the Alaska Association of School Boards and the Coalition for Education Equity. To improve our emphasis on the fundamental skill of reading, we must commit ourselves to supporting proven solutions like investing in pre-K funding, reducing class size so teachers are able to give all of their students the individual attention that each of them deserve, increasing resources for reading intervention support programs led by certified teachers, especially in our economically disadvantaged communities. And we'll also work to fulfill the promise and goals of the Alaska Challenge by empowering school districts, not by diverting public money away from public schools. There has been an incredible investment in online learning technology in Alaska school districts and nationally, of course, the potential of which we've only begun to explore. The improvement of these tools will only serve to better allow educators to manage their classrooms more efficiently, create and present engaging lessons, and connect with students both in person and remotely. What Mr. Wooten referred to as a hybrid sort of example moving forward. One Alaskan example, which I am particularly proud of, that I'd like to highlight, is the collaboration of DEED and educators to leverage education technology to support remote, in-person, and hybrid instruction. In partnership with Commissioner Johnson and DEED staff, Alaska educators have collaborated to provide a common online platform that all students and educators in Alaska will be able to connect to. This learning management system, or LMS as it's sometimes abbreviated, that was selected is called Canvas. I really like the name as it invokes sort of that blank sheet a painter starts with. And we often talk about the art of teaching. And in this case, we feel like we're creating something that can take that blank slate and paint a masterpiece. We're calling it the Alaska Commons, or the Alaska Learns Commons, which is a network of educators that are building and sharing high-quality curricula in every discipline. Creating this open-source marketplace of ideas, if you will, it's free, of course, for those who participate. It connects the compounded experience and the expertise of our educators all across the state, who will constantly be sharing, improving, and vetting materials to produce the best lessons to engage kids and meet Alaska standards. It literally is empowering teachers to truly reach, teach, and inspire students to fulfill the Alaska DEED mission of providing an excellent education for every student every day. The model and collaboration and the development of this project between DEED and NEA Alaska members has actually inspired Instructure, which is the company who owns Canvas, to take a particular interest in what we're doing. They're actually learning from our work, providing additional support, and in fact, investing in professional development for Alaskan educators because they are so intrigued by this unique work and partnership. And they're starting to promote the model to other states who are looking for solutions. Moving into the future, we'll be looking for sustained support in this innovative, collaborative educational resource for Alaska students and teachers. Funding for this project will need to be sustained when COVID relief money, which is currently funding the effort, runs out. So not this year, but looking forward, trying to plant the seed here. NEA Alaska too, because we believe in it so deeply, has pledged $80,000 of our own money to invest in its success right now by providing professional development for educators and creating an incentive program to encourage members to participate and contribute to the building of the Alaska Commons. We must take advantage of opportunities to examine our entire system to improve student outcomes, such as our system of assessment, having discussions of competency-based learning, improving students' life readiness, ensuring access to digital education technology, especially for our students in rural Alaska. making sure our career and technical opportunities and tracks align with opportunities in our local and future economy, and ensuring that our students of color truly have equal access to educational opportunities. This pandemic, if it's done anything, has highlighted and even deepened those inequities which persist in our society. As we engage in discussions of educational policy, I want you to know that Alaska's educators stand ready and are available as a resource to consult with and assist when there are questions. Our members are experts in every discipline, from reading specialists to career and technical instructors and special education teachers and paraprofessionals at every grade level and every discipline all across the state. When making decisions, it's vital that we keep at the forefront of the conversation the impacts on practitioners and their students. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today and your kind attention. I'm available for questions during any remaining time I may have. I'll do my best to answer, but of course, if I don't know, I can reach out to the vast resource of expertise and knowledge embodied in our members across the state and get back to you with the right answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Claymire. We're a bit over our time for the meeting today, but are there any questions from the committee? Having no questions, thank you again, Mr. Claymire. Thank you to all of our presenters today. Your insights are valuable to the committee as we identify the issues that we're here to address. I believe I speak for all the members when I say that we want to ensure that Alaska's children are well prepared for life after high school. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday, February 3rd at 9 a.m. We will receive an update from the University of Alaska President Pat Pitney. Is there any other business? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned at 10:32.